The Minnesota House of Representatives Committee on Public Safety and Criminal Justice Reform will come to order. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Mariani.
Present.
Vice Chair Frazier.
Present.
Representative Johnson.
Present.
Representative Edelson. Present. Representative Feist.
Present.
Representative Grossel. Representative Grossel. Representative Hollins.
Present.
Representative Hewitt, excused. Representative Cleavorn.
Present.
Representative Long.
Present.
Representative Lucero.
Yes.
Representative Mueller.
Present.
Representative Novotny.
Present.
Representative O'Neill.
Present.
Representative Pinto. Representative Pinto. Representative Poston.
Present.
Representative Raleigh.
Raleigh present.
Representative Vang.
Present.
Representative Zhang, excused. Representative Grossel.
Present.
Representative Pinto. That concludes roll call.
Very well. Members, clerk, or rather a quorum is present. Let me just do a simple olive branch, reach out to my colleague, Representative Lucero, who reached out to me yesterday for a phone call. And Representative Lucero, if you're available today, I'll get back to you if that's good. In the meantime, would you be so kind as to move our minutes of Friday, January 12th?
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that. So moved.
Very well. Representative Sarah moves adoption of the minutes of January 12th. Discussion. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails, and the minutes of Friday, January 12th for this committee are hereby adopted. Representative Lucero, thank you. I'll give you a call later on if you're available. With that, members, we have three bills up for discussion and action today. This is part of a week of bills where we're going to be looking at survivor advocacy issues, a number of bills related to sexual assault crimes, investigations, interventions, as well as consequences for for convictions of those offenses. Today, we have three bills, and we're going to begin with House File 295. Representative Mueller, it's always a delight to have Representative Mueller back before us. And so Representative Mueller, the chair will move to refer House File 295 to the Committee on Ways and Means. Please come forward, state your name for the record, and let's begin the testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. It is great to be back again. So House File 295 would require the BCA to investigate sexual assaults that are perpetrated by and against members of the Minnesota National Guard. The idea for this bill started a few years ago when I met with Shayla Scholl, a constituent, who told me about the assault she endured as a member of the National Guard at the hands of another Guard member. Through Shayla, I met other brave survivors, some of whom you'll hear from today. And for these crimes, it's up to local law enforcement agencies to investigate them. The survivors told me that the delays in investigations at the local level held things up for the military investigation, and the inconsistency among investigations at the local level can also create challenges, not only for survivors, but for the military investigation that follows. Upon hearing from these survivors, I talked to the National Guard and learned about their report, the Minnesota National Guard Sexual Assault Prevention and Response Review Board. The report was released in March of 2020, and it's included in your packet. Recommendation 1.4 includes a suggestion that the BCA act as the investigative agency for sexual assault investigations. We've tried to be very clear with the language of the bill that the BCA investigation applies only to Minnesota Guard members who are sexually assaulted by other Minnesota Guard members, and the local law enforcement agency knows that both are Guard members. This bill has bipartisan support, and Senator Duckworth has introduced the companion, and the Minnesota Coalition Against Sexual Assault supports this bill. And with that, Mr. Chair, I have several testifiers ready to go.
Very well. Thank you, Representative Mueller. I do have a list here. And so what I have is first up, Shayla Shaw, who I had the pleasure of briefly meeting as we discussed Texas weather a few minutes ago. Ms. Shaw, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and please provide us with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Specialist Shayla Scholl. I'm here today to testify in support of House File 295. As Kelly stated, I am the reason for this legislation being introduced. In 2016, I was sexually assaulted by another guardsman the night I graduated advanced individual training. I attempted to report the sexual assault, but was discouraged from reporting by local law enforcement. After that experience, I didn't have the motivation or the energy to act on it further. Then in late 2017, after finishing treatment for stage 4 blood cancer, I received messages on Facebook from a civilian woman asking about what had been done to me. It turns out that everything that was done to me was also done to her too. After confirming to this then stranger that I too was sexually assaulted by the same person, we were both now part of a sexual assault investigation that would span 2.5 years. I spent a little over half of my obligation to the Minnesota Army National Guard in a sexual assault investigation. This isn't uncommon, and this is the average length of the investigation according to the state's last SAPR review board. What you don't see is the toll this is taking on me and my family, my friends, and my children. By the time this investigation neared its end in mid-2019, I had delivered my first child. Going through a sexual assault case when you're pregnant with your first child is traumatic in its own special way when you have constant ultrasounds. I don't remember any of my children's birth because I requested be sedated to ensure that I not remember being touched by anybody. I could not breastfeed because I did not feel as though I had yet regained control over my own body. The stress and anxiety contributed to postpartum preeclampsia, and I almost died. Sorry. You see, Mr. Chairman, the reason why I'm here today is not because I wanted justice for myself. I carried the weight of the sexual assault for a year before I reported. I reported after I was approached by somebody else who also endured the sexual assault. But I will forever sit with the guilt of being a service member in a group of civilian women who look to me to be, to meet, to follow, to uphold, and exceed the standard of the law, and somebody who puts service before self. Reporting put a target on my back that I will have to live with forever, but that is the cross that I will bear if it prevents others from carrying the same. That is one hell of a weight to carry. I continue to serve beyond my obligation to the National Guard, now in the Army Reserve in Texas with my active duty spouse. But Minnesota is and will always be my home. With this legislation, it'll ensure that soldiers and airmen of this organization are entitled to timely and unbiased sexual assault investigations so we can continue to serve in our community safely. I urge you to vote yes on House File 295. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Specialist Shaw. I wish you well on your road to healing. I trust all our committee members up here do as well. What happened to you, you did not deserve. It is not your fault. There's nothing who you are, merits, the crime committed on you and on your person. I want to thank you for the courage to be here before us in public as you serve our citizens Obviously, you're serving it in your service as a guard member, but you're also serving it with the testimony that you've given here today. Let's work together to honor your presence and your words. So thank you for being with us today. If you're able to stay for a bit, that would be not necessary, but welcome. We typically will go through our list of testifiers, and then there may be questions or comments that committee members may want to direct at you, if that's okay.
Absolutely, Mr. Chairman. Thank you so much.
Very well. Thank you, Specialist Shaw. Next up, we have Donald Kerr, Minnesota Department of Military Affairs, Executive Director. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Kerr. Please state your name for the record and provide us with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I am Don Kerr, the Executive Director of the Department of Military Affairs. And though the department normally remains neutral in legislation that doesn't apply directly to military code, we really strongly support this bill because we think it'll close a critical gap that we have in conducting timely, credible, and consistent investigations that we can then use to improve discipline of the National Guard, protect our service members in this area of great concern. And that's my short statement, Mr. Chair, and I will hang around in case any members of the chair have any questions.
Very well. Thank you, Executive Director Kerr. Thank you for your presence here today and for your encouragement of this bill. Yes, if you could, in case there are questions, we greatly would appreciate that. Next, we have Mr. John Thompson, Minnesota National Guard Sexual Assault Response Coordinator. Mr. Thompson, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and please give us your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, and thank you. For the record, I'm John Thompson, the Sexual Assault Response Coordinator for the Minnesota National Guard. The Minnesota National Guard requires a strong base of foundational trust and faith from our membership. And I believe that this bill would help to reinforce the trust and faith that we require from our members. Anything that we can do to shorten the timelines that Ms. Scholl, Specialist Scholl brought up when it comes to the criminal investigative process, would be a win, not just for the victims and survivors. It would also be a win for the organization. And it would also be a win, and this may be odd to say in this surrounding, but it would be a win for the offenders as well, whose lives are often put on hold while the investigation takes place. And I will also stay on the call if there's any questions that I can answer, sir. Thank you.
Very well. Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Next, we have Bonnie Daniels, a Minnesota National Guard member. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record, and please provide us with your testimony. Representative Muller, I know earlier before the committee, we were trying to figure out because of some of the technical issues that they might be facing, that there might be a technical connection, but let's see if that, or technical connection problem, but let's see if that's the case.
I think they were muted, Mr. Chair. I think the two are in the same room, perhaps.
Oh, okay. Well, let's see if they hear us, if they can unmute.
Can you hear me?
Yes, indeed. Welcome.
My name is Bonnie Daniels, and I am here today to testify in support of House File 295. I was sexually assaulted by my master sergeant on January 9th of 2016. It was a drill weekend. Prior to the assault, I had always thought of myself as being extremely goal-oriented, outgoing, happy, and carefree. I just graduated and was planning for my career in the Houston, Texas Medical Center as an X-ray tech. The sexual assault changed everything. My always positive attitude was non-existent. I blamed myself. I told myself things like, it's my fault I had a drink with him. I should have known better. Nobody actually cares about me. Nobody will believe me. I'm annoying people. I'm crazy. People will think I'm overreacting. I can't trust anybody. Men only want me for sex. I'm not good enough. I'm worthless. A nobody. Those feelings of guilt and shame haunted me throughout the investigation, as well as the sickness in my stomach, hearing I wasn't the only one. I had my first thoughts of suicide right before my 29th birthday, a little over a year and a half after I reported the sexual assault. Shortly after my first thoughts of suicide, I drove to the VA in Houston for an appointment with the military sexual trauma coordinator. She was surprised I hadn't canceled that appointment because it was the first day Hurricane Harvey hit Houston in August of 2017. I told her I had called for help once before, a few months after I was sexually assaulted, because I knew I needed help, but nobody called me back. It took me over a year and a half to call again. If I had canceled that appointment, I didn't know how long it would be before I had the courage to call again, if I even made it that long. The entire investigation took 2 years to complete. Please vote yes to House File 295. When it comes to someone's life, every second counts. Vote yes to ensure them of a timely investigation, which would provide them with that piece of closure that is needed to truly begin to heal. 2 years is too long. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Ms. Daniels. And are you still part of the guard at this point?
I am not.
Okay, all right. Ms. Daniels, as I shared with Specialist Show earlier, you have the sincerest best wishes of this committee and your role to wholeness. And please know that we see you and we see you in your dignified wholeness. And I can't express enough my appreciation for your courage to give voice to what needs to be given voice to so that we can end behavior, the crime that was committed against you that had nothing to do with anything of who you are. So thank you again for being with us here today. If you're able to stay for questions and comments, I'd appreciate that as well, but there's no need to. But please know that you're welcome to stay for questions period as well. With that, members, we're gonna move to Sarah Kostek. Sarah Kostek, if you can state your name for the record and provide us with your testimony, that would be welcome.
Somebody? Yeah. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. My name is Sarah Kostek. I'm here today to testify in support of Bill 295. You see, in 2014, I was sexually assaulted by my first sergeant, the senior most enlisted member in the unit. Because the National Guard requires us to go to civilian law enforcement to report cases first, I had to report my assault with local law enforcement. The local law enforcement did not take my case serious at all. They asked me if I was at a local bar off post, if I would report it as well. From there, I became one of the first Minnesotans to experience a complex investigation. This is where a team of senior military members travel to Minnesota to investigate the crime. They then continue to Washington National Guard Bureau to review the findings and make a decision. This was almost a 2-year process. The investigation resulted in an honorable discharge of my first sergeant. Nothing was noted on his record, and he continued to serve as a police officer in his hometown. Speed up to 2019, I started talking about my experience and hope that others wouldn't feel alone. I shared the story with a new friend. She replied back, "What is his name?" Once I told her, she stated, "That's not the worst he has done." That statement from her still haunts me today. If it's not the worst he has done, and if he used and abused his power in the military, what is he doing as a police officer? Please vote yes on HF 295 so the criminals can be taken off civilian streets as well as military ones. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Ms. Kostek. And I know I've said it already. When you say things repeatedly, it almost sounds to some folks like you don't mean it, but I do mean it. And I know this committee means it as well in terms of expressing its appreciation of you as a person, of seeing you as a dignified person, as knowing that what was perpetrated against you was not anything that came about because of who you are. And we are deeply appreciative for your courage and your willingness to be here today to tell us your story and to encourage us to create laws that can help protect and help make sure that when there's wrongdoing, that in fact, when crimes like this happen and are perpetrated, that we will act. And preferably, we're acting in a way that prevents them in the first place. But thank you for being with us today. Members, but we have several members who have comments and questions. Let me just very quickly, to Representative Mullard, I would certainly invite Mr. Kerr, Thompson, Mr. Thompson, with the Department of Comment as well. Maybe just a very quick, you know, context thing. So I'm learning a few things here, Representative Mullard. One of the things I'm hearing is that there's this requirement that there be a civilian investigation first. I think that's what I heard. And without passing judgment, I'm just curious if that is in fact the case, and what is the what is the principle and the what are the principles that are behind that? So anyway, just generally from a total layperson's perspective, just to understand how things up to now typically proceed and what the rationale is for that.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Yes, I am learning about all things National Guard too throughout my process with this bill. But I think the best person to perhaps address those specific questions is Mr. Thompson.
Very well, Mr. Thompson.
Thank you once again, Mr. Chairman. So when it comes to sexual assault within the military, the National Guard is much different. It has a much different process than the active component. The active component, when a sexual assault occurs, it's done in an unrestricted manner, the reporting, there's going to be an investigation. Those investigations are typically conducted by a military investigative branch, such as CID in the Army. Most people are more familiar with NCIS for the Navy and Marine Corps from the television show. We in the National Guard do not have our own internal investigative capabilities. So we're required to have an unbiased, independent investigation. And our regulatory requirements have us do that through local law enforcement. So whatever local law enforcement agency has jurisdiction where the sexual assault took place, that's where we make our notification. When you think about Minnesota, because we have Guard members scattered around the state, 14,000 just about is our membership. We're trying to establish and maintain working relationships with all of these different city police departments, county sheriff's departments, and both city and county prosecutors' offices. And sometimes, even though we hope for a standard approach to the investigation and to the justice piece, there's all slight differences in a lot of these departments. Some of it has to do with manning and staffing and the resources that are available. So we feel that having the BCA is if you want to call it a one-stop shop for our investigative needs, that would speak to a standard of service in one sense. And again, anything that we can do to shorten the timelines is going to be a win for all parties. Our adjutant general has said, slow justice is often perceived as no justice. And this is another one of those instances. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Tuss. That's very helpful for me. And I certainly beginning to appreciate the complexity of interacting with so many different units. And of course, part of our law enforcement design, if you will, in our state, is to honor the fact that different communities have different dynamics that play, even as you mentioned, there's always a need for a strong element of uniformity to ensure that people's rights are being honored and followed. All right, very well. We have Representative Grosso, followed by Representative Long. Representative Grosso.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative Mueller, for bringing this forward. I think you answered some of my questions as far as my concern was to how is this going to mesh with the UCMJ. And I think you guys have that part of it worked out from what I understand. Is that correct?
That's to
Representative Mueller.
Yeah, oh, very well. Representative Mueller.
Or whoever can answer that.
Very well.
Yeah, I'll let Mr. Thompson answer that.
Very well, Mr. Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So there, when you look at the Uniform Code of Military Justice, the UCMJ, that is more applicable to active duty. There is also a document, an entity referred to as the Minnesota Code of Military Justice, the MCMG, that more addresses our Title 32 service. So there are differences. We work continually to try to create more parallels between the two, but just based off of our services, National Guard members, there's some differences. So this also would address some of those differences without like stepping on anyone's toes.
Representative Lawson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you for that answer, sir. With that being said, what I'm hearing is that there's this delay. There's a delay with investigation. There's a delay with the process in the civilian world. And as far as these three ladies, these three testifiers that were just there at all, I'm sorry that happened. I mean, that should never happen to any woman. And please, you know, I just, my thoughts and prayers are with all of you that healing comes, and it comes completely for you. With that being said, you're going at this, Representative Mueller, you're going at this from the angle of putting some more BCA agents to help expedite this process. Am I correct in what I'm hearing?
Representative Mueller.
That's right, Mr. Chair, Representative Grassl. It's really to not only expedite the process, but also that consistency of reporting. As Mr. Thompson said, these are occurring all over the state, and they have all these different kinds of relationships with different agencies. And so it's also not only to enhance the speed with which these happen, but the consistency.
Representative Grassl.
Mr. Chair, thank you. And, you know, I know both you and Representative O'Neill were working on that, reforming the criminal crim sex code as well. Is this something that could be implemented also into helping the process go quicker for sexual assault across the board?
Representative Mullen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And yes, Representative Grassl, you're going to be hearing that bill on Thursday. Mm-hmm. The working group was just tasked with looking at the criminal sexual assault statutes, not necessarily the investigations. There were a number of other recommendations that were made. And you might recall in 2019, part of our omnibus bill was passed to have for the post board to create standards around sexual assault investigations. And so, you know, that work is being done at the civilian level. So really our focus right now is just on having the BCA investigate those cases involving guard-on-guard assault.
Very well.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Russell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that's, you know, that's what I want to make sure that this is going to help to make sure that those investigations, both civilian and National Guard, are expedited, get these things moving, get this justice for these victims, et cetera. And this is something I'd like to see you guys consider on that council or that committee as well, to implement something like this. Last thing here, I had a similar conversation with the AG's office in reference to helping local agencies, local prosecutors with these heavier lift type cases. These sexual assault cases are take some time from what I was told and what I've experienced, that to have the AG's office do like they did back when I was on a task force for when the methamphetamine labs, the mom and pop labs were so exploding over the state. They had a special prosecutors group that would go to these areas, take these heavy loads off of local prosecutors, because it was a very time consuming process that it would take them, free them up to go back to doing their county work, and these state prosecutors from the AG's office would do this. Is that something that would also be something to talk about to help make sure that these cases don't get stretched out and on and on and on, to where you get the AG's office with a task force, you have a task force such, you know, agents specialized in the BCA to help with the investigation, to expedite that. Then you have special prosecutors from the AG's office come in and help with the prosecution part of it.
Excellent observations and points, Representative Moeller, quickly, and then we're going to move to the next questioner.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Grassl, it's not part of this bill, but I'd certainly be glad to have further conversations with you about that. I worked at the Attorney General's office in the criminal division at the time they were handling those meth cases, as you mentioned. I believe there was some federal funding involved in that. So, of course, anything that we would do like this would require adequately funding the Attorney General's office if we were to shift that function over to them. But I'd be glad to talk with you further about that.
Let's visit. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Grassl. Representative Long, followed by Representative O'Neill. Representative Long.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just real quick, before I turn to my question, Representative Grassl, I carried a bill last year that would have funded that work at the Attorney General's office, and would be happy to follow up with you about that. I just want to thank Representative Moeller for bringing this bill forward, and the three testifiers for bravely sharing their stories. And I'm really hopeful that we can take your words to heart and take action on this bill. It feels like there's real need for consistency if we're having these folks who are coming from all over the state, potentially to places like Camp Ripley or elsewhere, and that this having local law enforcement sort of deal with a state problem doesn't necessarily make that much sense. And my question for Mr. Thompson is, when you have local law enforcement dealing with residents of different parts of the state, have you seen that become a challenge in the investigations, both in terms of the timeline and in terms of consistent results?
Mr. Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Long, absolutely. When we're talking about the logistics of travel to, both from the law enforcement standpoint or our service member standpoint, trying to make those connections to conduct interviews for the investigation, if the more widespread the victim, the witnesses, the offender, members of the chain of command, it does add time to the process.
Representative Long.
Thank you, Mr.
Chair. I would say yes, that's a definite concern.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. This just seems fundamentally different from, a typical investigation where folks might live in the same community, and having the BCA involved, I think, makes a ton of sense. So thank you, Representative Moeller, for bringing this forward.
Thank you, Representative Long. I apologize, Mr. Thompson, I jumped in a little prematurely. The video got stuck on my end, so my apology for that. Members, I am struck by, we always talk about this in this committee, just, the incredible logistical challenges of space and distance in our state, as well as just the natural diversity that we have across different communities here, poses a particular challenge that perhaps in its worst case makes it inviting for wrongdoers to exploit. So for us to be able to fill in and fill in those gaps and prevent that kind of intentional exploitation is critically important. Representative O'Neill, followed by Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to thank Representative Moeller for bringing yet another great bill. And this is moving the needle forward again. It is taking a step in the right direction to change the culture and to seek justice for those that have not had justice. And again, I am struck by hearing the same story of serial rapists allowed to continue to rape more and more and more women. And that's just what rings in my ears. And maybe it's because I also am a survivor, and so I'm very sensitive to that. That's why we did the test all red kit bill, and now we're going to be seeking justice and getting justice for women that have been raped and putting behind bars, hopefully, the serial rapists that are doing the raping. To all the survivors, thank you so much for your courage to come forward today. You are making a huge difference from one survivor to another. You are brave. You are amazing. And I am incredibly grateful that you came and you shared your story. And just know that when you leave, that you have left a very important part of you, which is the truth and what really happened. And you are going to affect change here in the state of Minnesota. You are the change makers. And I just want to thank you, and Representative Mueller and I have worked very hard in the past and will continue in the future to make sure that you have justice. So, and I'm a Republican and she's a Democrat, and we don't think that rape should be partisan. Isn't that a crazy thing? Rape is not partisan. Justice for rape victims is not partisan. So thank you for your stories. Thank you for your courage. Continue to do your, to tell your story and to help others heal. And again, just thank you so much. I don't have any questions. I'm just very, very grateful for Representative Mueller's bill. And I know that my whole team will be supporting this today, and we will be glad to support it. Thank you.
Well said, Representative O'Neill. Thank you. Representative Johnson.
Chair Mariani, Representative Mueller, thank you for this bill. I understand this, and I'm in shock that our National Guard does not have a CID unit. They have a JAG, but the commanders appoint somebody to do the investigations on issues, not only like this, but even other issues. I would love to see this bill go to Veterans Affairs so they can ask Brigadier Commander or General Mankey, who happens to be my constituent, if he plans to get something like this started, because this is something that they should be doing, because it I think it's important that they should be investigating not just news but other things, because they have a lot more latitude and they can actually get things done quicker through the CID unit. Or they have, so that's an issue that I was shocked when I heard. I want to thank, the first testifier, Ms. Scroll, for her testimony today. And I hope that she still remembers the name of that officer who said that didn't want to do anything to report him to her. His chief law enforcement officer, because that officer should not be there. He has a duty and responsibility. The vast majority of officers don't do stuff like that. It's the lazy ones that shouldn't have that job that should be talked to and disciplined. We need to do whatever we can to help these victims and make sure the perpetrators are behind bars, whether it's in the military stockade or the civilian prison system. We need to get these perpetrators off the streets and away from their targets and get them the help and help the victims as much as possible. I'm going to be voting for this bill in favor of it, but like I said, I'd love to see it go to Veteran Affairs, because this is a issue that needs to be done, be talked about in the Veterans Affairs Committee as well, and to find out why these things weren't handled properly to begin with, and take a good deep look at what they need to be doing as well. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. I think fair observations. And Representative Mulder, I know it might stretch beyond the language in the bill, but I'm just curious if perhaps Mr. Kerr or Mr. Thompson, perhaps Mr. Kerr can share a little bit about whether any, discussions or thoughts within the Guard itself relative to the CID unit creation. I would not have that prejudice this bill one way or the other, but just out of, our own curiosity, and perhaps Representative Johnson may have identified another element that might need to be addressed at some point.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Mr. Kerr, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I'd be happy to address that, sir. The force structure of the National Guard, which determines what units we have, is determined at the federal level. And the feds have not allocated any CID or Air Force investigation force structure for a fairly simple reason. From their perspective, they need those capabilities to be able to investigate federal crimes under the Uniform Code of Military Justice. And the reality is there are 54 different solutions for the state codes that replicate that Uniform Code of Military Justice. And so there has been no force structure made available to the states. We actually have been pursuing Criminal Investigation Division force structure for at least 15 years. That was one of the tasks I had when I was the Director of Plans and Policy for the Minnesota National Guard. But there simply is no force structure available from the federal government, and they do control how that force structure is allocated. There is also a jurisdictional issue in state law that does govern that jurisdiction primarily goes to civil authorities first. There are some certain circumstances, and generally sexual assault cases fall into this category, where we do have secondary jurisdiction. That's where we run into these things. But there are certain things that are very important to us in the military, particularly in the relationship between the victim and the perpetrator, where there's a superior in one position or the other. That matters to us. It does not matter in the civilian world. So that's something that we're very interested in, but a county prosecutor may not see a crime when something like that occurs. They may see a situation that occurred between consenting adults. And so it's very difficult for them to make the same kind of decision that we would make. And that time delay comes in when we are granted that secondary jurisdiction. Our recourse is to request support from the Office of Complex Investigations at the National Guard Bureau. That's kind of their federal solution to not having CID in the states. And the challenge is they'll send a team out then and do those investigations. But as you can imagine, because they support all 54 states and territories, they have a massive workload and a long lag time in getting in here and doing those investigations. We can then use the results of those investigations to take both administrative and non-judicial and judicial actions inside the Minnesota Code of Military Justice. But again, that time lag is horrendous with regard to our service members at this time. And we really feel like having the BCA involved early will result in investigations that we can take action on much earlier in the process than is the current case. And it fills that gap for us that we really don't have available to us from the federal government.
Thank you, Mr. Kerr. I appreciate that detailed walkthrough of some of the important elements here. And to me, it sort of speaks to, in many ways, sort of the unique nature of the Guard itself and how it has been structured in relationship to numerous jurisdictions, from federal to, you know, the very localized one. What I do hear here, Representative Mueller, is a strong will on the part of the Guard and of civilians and of legislators to move in terms of responding to this time lag issue, and it seems your bill will allow us to do that. And I also hear that there's an ongoing agenda here that needs to be worked on, and so I look forward to this committee being a partner in doing that work with everyone here. Representative Mueller, your bill, what I have here is that we're going to lay this over, and I think the reason for that, Representative Mueller, has to do with fiscal costs. We are directing over to the State Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. So I'm just wondering if you can just say a few words about costs and to provide some context for the need at this point to lay this bill over, which for everyone just really means that the bill would then come back up as we put together our fiscal omnibus bill. But I just want to check that with you, Representative Mueller.
Yeah. Lost my earpiece there. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you hear me okay?
Yes,
okay. Great. So you should have received the fiscal note, but I have been in touch with the BCA about this. There's a question about some of the numbers that were used. We're trying to get some more specific data from the Guard or clarify the data that we have on that. So if anything, the number is going to go down, and I'm hopeful that that will be the case. But that's where we are with respect to the fiscal note and I think why this bill would be laid over.
Okay. Very well. I just don't want anyone to misinterpret what our motion would be, given the urgency and you know, it looks like a really strong desire on the part of everyone to act here, that it really is more about making sure that we've got that we're allocating the resources and recognizing the resources needed to do the work called for in this bill. Representative Mueller, any final comments before we move to layover?
Yes, Mr. Chair, and I don't want to forget to mention the letter that's in your packet from another survivor, and I would encourage members to please read that letter. I know that Ms. Scholl wanted to read that out loud, but in the interest of time, it isn't doing that, but it's still very important, and I think it just highlights, again, the courage and the bravery of these survivors who have shared their story with us. As Ms. Scholl has talked about, the weight of the burden really has been on her. She's been a real leader among other survivors in bringing this forward. It's why we've referred to this bill as Shayla's Law, but it really represents so many of the survivors who have either brought their stories forward or who are living with that pain every day. And we want to make this system better for all of them. So thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to our testifiers and to the members of this committee.
Indeed. Thank you, Representative Mulder. I did read a letter. I would encourage everyone to read it as well. So to all our testifiers here today, particularly our courageous survivors and strong advocates for justice, I want to thank you as well for being with us here today. At this point, Representative Mulder, the chair will lay over House File 295 for possible inclusion in our omnibus finance bill. Thank you, Representative Mulder. Members, next we're going to move to House File 289, Representative Edelson.
Hello, committee members. House File, I'd like to move to 289 to be before the committee.
Representative Edelson moves House File 289 to the General Register. Representative Edelson, your bill is before us.
Great, thank you. Thank you, Chair and committee members. House Bill 289 came before this committee last year and had strong bipartisan support. I want to thank my co-authors, both Republican and Democrats, this year. My understanding is it will be moving in the Senate, and Senator Limmer has agreed to give it a hearing at this point. The language in this bill seeks to provide immunity from prosecution of a victim or person who seeks to help a victim after a sexual assault from being charged with a controlled substance or underage drinking. This bill is what we know as a Good Samaritan bill. We have these laws to help encourage people to help others. We have two that I know of in the state of Minnesota, one to help with somebody who is having an overdose and one that's having a medical emergency in general. The goal of this is to remove the hesitation to assist or help report a crime. I think when you're weighing what is more important is to convict somebody of underage drinking or to hold somebody that has committed sexual assault. I think that we would all agree that sexual assault is the worst of the crimes. Sexual assault is serious, and this bill has been brought to me by the University of Minnesota, a group of working policy students, and they are here to testify today. And Mr. Chair, I'd like to go ahead and move directly to them.
Wow, thank you, Representative Edelson. I have Gurturan Johal, Margot Granath, and Sam Parmekar. And so we'll begin with Gurturan Johal, if you can state your name for the record, and please give us your testimony.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Hi, everyone. My name is Gurtran Johal, and I am a third-year student at the University of Minnesota studying political science and sociology with a minor in Spanish studies. I currently serve as the speaker of forum for the Minnesota Student Association, but last year I served as the Sexual Assault Task Force Chair, where I had the opportunity to work with passionate leaders across our university to ensure that victim survivors were being heard and empowered through our advocacy efforts. One of the biggest advocacy efforts that we have been pushing for over the past 4 years is the passage of House File 289, which would provide medical amnesty to victim survivors in the possession, sharing, or use of drugs and alcohol. Currently, as you are all aware, there is statutory medical amnesty in the state of Minnesota that provides immunity from prosecution for those in a medical emergency. So we are simply seeking to extend this immunity to victim survivors. Many will ask the question as to why this piece of legislation is incredibly important for the lives of students on campus. According to the Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network, a drug-facilitated sexual assault can occur in two specific ways: when a perpetrator voluntarily takes advantage of a survivor's consumption of alcohol or drugs, or when a perpetrator intentionally forces a survivor to consume drugs without their knowledge. Specifically, Rain finds that alcohol is the most commonly used substance in drug-facilitated sexual assaults, clearly illustrating how House File 289 is incredibly significant in order to ensure that victim survivors are immune from prosecution. Furthermore, there are a variety of reasons that victim survivors choose not to report, one of which is the fear of retaliation and prosecution due to the consumption of drugs or alcohol. Victim survivors feel silenced, and this has to change in order to best support and empower survivors. We pledge to continue pushing our peers and our elected officials to better support and stand by survivors. We have to stand by survivors and give them the opportunity to report if they choose to do so. To all survivors, we hear you, we support you, and we believe you. You matter, your voice matters, and your story matters. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Ms. Johan. Next, we have Margot Graneth. If you can state your name for the record and give us your testimony, we'd appreciate it.
Hi, my name is Margot Graneth. I am currently a senior at the University of Minnesota with a major in political science and minors in business law and Arabic. And I have been working on sexual assault prevention and advocacy efforts through the University of Minnesota since my freshman year. Last March, I sat in front of you all and testified for House File 289, a bill to grant victim survivors and persons assisting with medical amnesty. Nearly a year, a birthday, and one pandemic later, I sit here in front of you again to urge you to pass House File 289. As a survivor, I know the deep scars and shame that an assault can leave behind. I struggled with acknowledging what happened to me for years. I'm extremely grateful I had support networks and well-funded resources, primarily through the University of Minnesota, that aided in my healing process and recovery. Many, especially those who have just been hurt, are not so lucky. A few of us students vowed to change this, not just for students at the university, but for college-age folks and minors across the state. We wrote a comprehensive medical amnesty policy for victim survivors that passed in our student government and later became the official policy for the Association for Big Ten Schools, a regional organization that represents over 500,000 students. Even still, we were disappointed at a state level. While Minnesota thankfully has Good Samaritan laws, these policies do not go so far as to protect survivors of sexual violence if they are under the influences of substances that they may or may not have chosen to take. It's been tiresome to keep fighting for medical amnesty. I'm 22 now. I co-authored the original resolution when I was 19, and last year when I spoke at the House, I was 21. This isn't like a declaration of how many birthdays I've had, but it's more of a statement on how long us students have worked for this particular change in Minnesota. I have a deep respect for the legislative process, and I also hope that this is the last time that I'm here. House File 289 aims to provide valuable protections to minors in the state of Minnesota. This bill provides immunity from prosecution for victim survivors and those assisting them. This bill is an act from the state to protect those who are vulnerable and to repair some of the broken systems in our country. I urge you to pass House File 289 as an act of protection, an act of security, and an act of belief in our survivors who need support. We cannot fail our minors and survivors, the future of Minnesota, because we are unwilling to repair broken systems. We must create a better future, one of hope, resiliency, and security. That can start today. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Ms. Grenath, and thank you for coming back this year. I share your frustration on this and many other issues that sometimes, unfortunately, take too long. Let's hope, let's work hard more than hope to get this across the finish line this year. Thank you. Next, we have Sam Parmakar from the University of Minnesota. Sam, if you can give us your name for the record and give us your testimony, we'd appreciate it.
Thank you, Chair Mariani, and thank you, Representative Edelson, for bringing this bill forward today. Good afternoon, members. My name is Sam Parmakar, and I'm the State Government Director for the Minnesota Student Association. We're the undergraduate student government at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities. Like my peers, I'm here today to ask you to pass House File 289 to provide important protections to victim survivors of sexual assault. The bill before you today is modeled off of two existing statutes, as has been alluded to, 340A.503, which grants alcohol amnesty protections to minors who experience a medical emergency, and 604A.05, the Good Samaritan Drug Overdose Law. Together, these statutes provide limited immunity from possession and consumption charges to an individual who suffers a medical emergency while under the influence of drugs or alcohol, as well as up to three bystanders who contact emergency services on their behalf. This is, of course, predicated on the notion that when someone's life is on the line, we think it's more important to make sure they get the care that they need than it is to charge them with a low-level drug or alcohol offense. While these laws offer protections in cases of medical emergencies, the immunity provisions do not currently extend to instances of sexual assault, which is what the bill before you today seeks to accomplish. The language in our bill is modeled directly off these existing statutes and uses the same standards laid out in them. It would provide limited immunity from prosecution for underage alcohol crimes under 340A.503, as well as fifth degree drug crimes under 152.025. The protections apply to the individual that experienced a sexual assault, as well as up to three individuals assisting the victim survivor in the reporting and investigation of an assault. This is a really important step to ensure that victim survivors feel supported when they come forward to report sexual violence. As we know, there are already so many institutional and cultural barriers to reporting an assault. This bill alone won't fix that problem entirely, but it will send a strong message, particularly to young people, that our institutions take sexual violence seriously. And believe me, there's a clear need for that message to be heard. According to 2019 data from the American Association of Universities, 54% of college women who did not report their sexual assault listed the fact that they were under the influence of alcohol as a reason for not coming forward and reporting. It's safe to assume that this statistic is unacceptably high for non-binary students as well. But it's not just sexual assault prevention advocates that recognize the benefit of these protections. It's law enforcement as well. In 2018, the University of Minnesota Police Department implemented a department policy providing medical amnesty protections for victim survivors. And in 2019, the Minneapolis Police Department followed suit. Since these policies have been implemented, sexual violence reporting has gone up at the U of M Twin Cities. While we can't establish a direct line of causation from this policy change, we do know that it has been part of an ongoing effort to create a campus culture that is supportive of victim survivors. Members, I think Representative Edelson said it best when she said, put plainly, the point of this bill is to encourage people to help one another. We wanna make sure that when someone is sexually assaulted, that there's absolutely no hesitancy on their behalf that they might get in trouble for coming forward and reporting if they were under the influence at the time of their assault. This is a really simple bill that just closes some of the gaps in our existing law, and we hope to earn your support for it today. Once again, thank you for the opportunity to testify, and we're happy to answer any questions you may have.
Very well. Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Parmakar. With that, members will open it up for discussion, questions, comments. Representative Pinto. Followed by Representative Johnson. Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I'll just note, as long as there weren't other hands going up, just to note what a terrific proposal I think this is. And thank you, Representative Edelson. And thanks to the students for pushing it. We have this Good Samaritan law on the books right now, but it really is quite narrow. And to have it be expanded in this way. And I should note, I was just looking through the bill text, I encourage other folks to do that too. And it really feels like it does so in a really thoughtful and narrow way. And I think in a really appropriate way. And I just love the final testimony, the final comment that was made, I guess echoing Representative Edelson about the purpose being to encourage people to help other people, because that's what we want at that moment when somebody is experiencing a crisis or challenging situation. So yeah, many thanks to the bill's author and to the folks advancing this.
Thank you, Representative Pinto. Representative Johnson, followed by Representative O'Neill. Representative Johnson.
Chair Mariani, Representative Edelson, and to the testifiers, thank you for bringing this forward. I always have concerns when we talk about issues such as this. I want to make sure that the crimes are reported. I want to make sure that the suspect, if he's guilty, goes to jail. But I also want to point out that in the law enforcement world, we understand these things happen where the victims have been using drugs or alcohol. And in my career, I'm not sure if Representative Novotny's more than likely has the same. I'm sure Representative Grossel has the same. When these victims come forward, they've been using drugs or alcohol. We never charge them with that. Unfortunately, the defense might use that and try to blame the victim in the court trial, but we never charge. We want to make sure those victims are taken care of. They get the help they need. They get the services they need. And if they've been have a habit of drugs or alcohol, we do our best to get them the help they need to deal with that addiction problem they might have. We don't charge them out. We work with them. So the issue with the immunity issue, though, is I have a feeling I see this bill is going to the general register. There's some with the immunity issue that I think, and it's prosecutorial side of it, and courts are involved. I think this bill should actually go to judiciary as well to be discussed there. I don't see having any problems there, but I think it should go there because it does deal with the court issues, which we do not have jurisdiction over. And again, I want to thank the testifiers for coming forward. We want to do our best to stop anybody from becoming a victim of sexual assault.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. Just for the record, so you know, because I had the same question about judiciary, so we reached out to our judiciary chair quickly. It is her sense that there's no need. She will think about it some more, but at this point, she's saying there's no need for her committee to review it. It's my understanding that the bill adds a new section of law to chapter 604J or 604A. Civil liability limitations. However, it doesn't make any changes to existing civil liability. It adds immunity from criminal prosecution. So that's the conversation with the chair. If there is a rethinking of that, we can certainly move the bill back, from the general register to the judiciary committee. But at this point, their advice to us is that there's no need for them to see the bill. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Edelson. Another good bill. I believe, just as Representative Pinto said, and so this is from the other side of the aisle, that it is appropriately narrow and focusing on exactly what we need to focus on, which is the victim of violence and sexual assault. And I appreciate the fact that you pointed out the very startling fact that I think you said 58% they don't report because they've used alcohol, I think is what you said. And that actually transcends to older women as well. That's probably a very similar statistic that a lot of women have been victimized because of use and they just can't defend themselves. And so that happens even past the age of college age. So I appreciate that you brought this forward and that we're focusing in the right area and it's appropriately narrow. And I believe my whole team will be supporting you. I'm glad to hear that there's that there's been a conversation with judiciary. I'll leave it in your hands if you feel like that it needs at least a quick go over in judiciary or not, but overall it's a good bill, and I'll be supporting it, and I believe my team will be supporting you as well.
Thank you, Representative O'Neill. I thought I saw someone else's hand pop up, but it popped back down. With that, Representative Ellison, your final comments, and then we'll move to a vote on your bill.
I want to thank the committee, and thank you, Representative O'Neill, for your support on this. That means a lot. You know, and I also just want to expand, we reached out to the chair of judiciary. This really does keep, it's very, very narrow. Actually, just in 2020, the Court of Appeals actually had a case before it that really just says it's protecting one person as they were looking at the Good Samaritan law. So it's not looking for broad sweeping protections of all people, but victims do underreport if they are using, and I think that is already, it's a challenge to come forward. So I think anything we can do as a state to help protect victims and make sure that they do get justice is really important. So I just thank everyone for their work on this, their support, and I thank the University of Minnesota students that were here testifying today for their support and their work.
Okay, well, members, with that, Representative Ellison renews her motion that House File 289 be referred to the General Register. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Mariani?
Aye.
Vice Chair Frazier?
Aye.
Representative Edelson?
Aye.
Representative Johnson, my apologies.
Aye.
Representative Feist?
Aye.
Representative Grossel?
Aye.
Representative Collins?
Aye.
Representative Hewitt, excused.
Aye. I'm here. Aye.
Okay. Representative Cleavorne?
Aye.
Representative Long?
Aye.
Representative Lucero? Representative Lucero? Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes yes.
Representative Devotny?
Devotny, aye.
Representative O'Neill?
O'Neill, aye.
Representative Pinto?
Aye.
Representative Poston?
Aye.
Representative Raleigh?
Raleigh, aye.
Representative Vang?
Aye.
Representative Zhang, excused. Representative Lucero?
Lucero, yes.
That concludes roll calls. With roll call with 18 ayes, one abstain.
Very well. With a roll call of 18 ayes and one abstain, House File 289 is referred to the General Register. Thank you, Representative Edelson, for your bill. Thank you for the testifiers and for your work on this important legislation. Members, our final bill for today is House File 331. And Representative Edelson, you might as well stay there. If you were in committee, I'd just have you stay in front of them, but you should stay either in your office or your home, wherever it is. But just kidding. Representative Ellison moves that House File 331 be referred to the General Register. Representative Ellison, your bill is before us.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, members. So House 331 is very similar to members that were on the committee last year. It was something that we left off we added if you are a registered predatory offender that I had a bill that said you had to notify the home health care aide of that. And so really this is adding hospice workers to that. We already have in statute nursing homes, assisted living facilities, and last year this committee we added home health care services, notifying them. So this is really about public safety, but it's also about workers' rights. This bill was brought to me by the Home Care Association, Minnesota Home Care Association, as a concern, and it was left off last year, honestly, by we just didn't think about it. And so this year we're coming back and that we will get the committee support to protect and making sure that workers do know if they are caring for somebody in hospice that that person that they are caring for, if they are on the predatory offenders list, that they know. So right now, I guess I just would like to go ahead and turn it over to my my testifier, Kathy Meserly.
Well, thank you, Representative Edelson. Welcome to the committee, Kathy Meserly. Please state your name for the record and provide us with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Kathy Meserly, and I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Home Care Association. Thank you to Representative Edelson for bringing this bill forward. The Minnesota Home Care Association is a nonprofit trade association representing more than 140 home care agencies throughout the state. Minnesota Home Care Association members support older adults and those with disabilities so they may remain living in their own homes and or with their families as long as possible by providing a wide range of home-based services, including nursing, therapies, hospice services, and more. We are in strong support of House File 331, a bill that will increase the safety of hospice care professionals. Having listened to the testimony from the last two bills, I would just add that my thoughts are with all the victims, and this bill is really intended to prevent that or to minimize more victims. Caring for individuals in need of hospice services can be incredibly rewarding. However, it can also be a challenging role because services are often provided in locations that are isolated and controlled by others. Receiving hospice services is a compassionate and personalized option for those individuals and families who choose it. And it is often a peaceful, valued end of life chapter for all involved in receiving and, quite frankly, providing the hospice care. However, hospice services can pose an increased threat risk to the hospice care professionals, especially when known risks were not shared with them so they can make the appropriate assessments and take necessary precautions. The Minnesota Home Care Association brought forward House File 331 so that hospice care agencies will be notified prior to admission if an individual to be served is a registered predatory offender. This is currently required, as Representative Edelson stated, for other facility and home-based service providers. Hospice care providers face risks each time they enter a home alone, not knowing what or who they will encounter. And this is just a small step in helping to ensure their safety. We ask for your support of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Meserly, and thank you for the work that you do in your sector and caring for our loved ones in the state of Minnesota. Members, questions, comments? Representative Edelson, I'm hoping that the not questions means that our members are embracing of your bill. Your comments before we move to vote on your bill.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, members. I'm going to take the quiet as somebody that's been in my second term. I'm going to take silence as good. and I want to just thank Representative Poston as well, and Representative Fraser, I think, signed on as well for their support. This is a bipartisan bill in the Senate. It is moving, and it's a good bill to support. And I thank members for their vote. Yes.
Very well. Members, with that, Representative Edelson renews her motion that House File 331 be referred to the General Register. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Mariani?
Aye.
Vice Chair Frazier? Vice Chair Frazier?
Aye.
Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Edelson?
Aye.
Representative Feist?
Aye.
Representative Grossel?
Aye.
Representative Holland?
Aye.
Representative Hewitt?
Aye.
Representative Cleavorn?
Aye.
Representative Long?
Aye.
Representative Lucero? Representative Lucero? Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes yes.
Representative Novotny?
Novotny, yes.
Representative O'Neill?
O'Neill, aye.
Representative Pinto?
Aye.
Representative Poston?
Aye.
Representative Raleigh?
Raleigh, aye.
Representative Vang?
Aye.
Representative Zhang, excused. Representative Lucero? That concludes roll call with 17 ayes and one excused.
Very well. Members, in a vote of 17 ayes and one excused, House File 331 is referred to the General Register. Thank you, Representative Edelson, and thank you, Ms. Messerly, and thank you, members. Members, with that, we're going to adjourn. I just want to remind folks we will be back. We will be convened again on Thursday. We'll be hearing, we heard reference to it earlier, Representative Mueller bill, House File 707, which contains criminal sexual conduct provisions. And those will be coming from the task force that we created a couple of years ago. And so I'm looking forward to those recommendations and to our discussions on that. You know, we'll continue as well on Friday. I think we have four bills up as we continue our focus on survivor advocacy issues. Members, with that, this committee stands adjourned.